Hi there. Welcome to The Preventable, the podcast giving you a seat at the table with conversations about the intersection of alcohol, drugs, and mental health in everyday lives. Take a seat and join us.
Welcome to The Preventable. With me today is a good friend of PreventEd's, just a good person in general, I think a good solid human being, executive director of Heal Stop Heroin, Ellis Fitzwalter. Welcome to The Preventable.
Well, thank you. First off, I'd like to thank, you know, PreventEd for having us here and for all the support they've given us and the rest of the community for that matter.
Well, thank you. The feeling is much, much reciprocated. So, Heal Stop Heroin. Talk to me about what that is. It's a community coalition.
Correct.
And what the heck does that mean?
Well, you know, we're fortunate the whole community, try to get the whole community involved. We're fortunate to have technical assistance from PreventEd. Mm-hmm. You know, we got the approval through the Missouri Department of Mental Health. So we're just trying to educate the community and work on prevention and doing whatever we can for harm reduction. Just trying to save lives.
How do you do that? I mean, I know one way that I can just speak to is you and your wife, Patty, who is the president of the board, you all human tables at just about every single event there is.
Yep.
I mean, you are out there providing resources. Can you talk a little bit about what those resources look like and what are some of the other things you do besides humaning tables at resource events?
Well, the resources include information from a lot of the organizations so we can point people in the right direction to get them the help that we need. We're too small to, you know, be able to provide treatment ourselves or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So
we
try to network with everybody and carry just a little bit of information about everybody that we can hand out. We also always have doTERRA bags at our...
What are doTERRA bags for people who don't
they
know?
They are safe medication disposal bags. All you do is larger bags, you can put up to 45 pills, add a little water, shake them up, throw them in the trash. Because we got to get them... If you got prescriptions you're not needing, you have to dispose of them properly. And if you have them and need them and they can be abused, you need to keep them locked up.
Mm-hmm. So you're handing out doTERRA bags, you're handing out Narcan.
Correct.
Which is the nasal spray. You're also doing walks. Can you talk a little bit about that and like where that started from? Because you inherited that kind of.
Well, yeah, we got when we lost our son in 2014, we sat silent for probably a year and a half because we were, like many people are, ashamed because of the stigma behind substance use disorder. So once we did, you know, we heard about the DEA launched a trial program in St. Louis probably around 2016 called Strategy 360. We saw that in the paper, read it and about it, and they looked like they, you know, were looking for community members, community leaders, law enforcement. So we called the DEA, and they sent a couple agents out to our house, and they spoke to us for a couple hours.
How scary was that, by the way?
Not at all. They were
the most
personable people that you could, you know, be. I mean, it was
they
a
really
pleasure.
Are, yeah.
I mean, they spent about 2 hours with us, and pointed us in directions where we could help out. One of them was an organization at that time was called Walking for Wellness Stop
yes.
Heroin.
Mm-hmm.
It was led up by a lady by the name of Guy Vigna. And so they introduced us to her, and we told her we wanted to, you know, start a chapter walking in North County. And so we
because
did.
Because you're from there.
Right.
That's where you live.
Yeah,
yep.
Exactly. And we know it's a hard-hit area.
Mm-hmm.
So we, you know, started doing some walks under that umbrella of, you know, walking for wellness. And after about a year and a half of that, at the end of 2017, she closed that organization down. And I understand fully why she did that because she hit the ground running right when they lost their daughter, probably, I think it was January of 2013, 2014. I'm not sure on the year, but she hit the ground running with this type of thing that we're doing now. And we saw a need to, keep it going once she did. So we farmed, Heel Stop Heroin.
And you're talking, I mean, when we say walks, I mean, you really are walking. You're in, and Gee did this too. I mean, you're
right.
In brightly neon colored shirts.
Correct.
And you are walking in high traffic areas in places that maybe don't always see a lot of foot traffic.
Right.
So she was out in the St. Charles area and you're.
Yeah.
Primarily focused on the North County area,
correct.
but you do
correct.
Throughout.
Yeah, I mean, we go all over the place pretty mm-hmm. much with our events and stuff like that. But COVID came.
COVID.
That kind of shut the walks down. And then I started having some back issues where I couldn't walk across the street without crawling. So we kind of shut the walks down for a little bit. And we're going to do things a little bit differently. We're going to travel, instead of doing weekly walks, we're probably going to do them about once a month.
Okay.
Thanks to being part of a coalition and the TA, we hope to get a TA grant to help boost these posts to, advertise the walks and get it out there more so we can get more participation.
How do people find out about them?
I've got an email list of about 300 people that I keep updates on what we're doing, mm-hmm. send that out. We're on Facebook. We have a web page. We're on LinkedIn. We're on Twitter.
How
we're
do
on
they find
Instagram.
You on Facebook? Like, what's your handle?
At Heel Stop Heroin.
Okay, there we go.
So, there you go. Yeah.
So you also, during COVID, I mean, you pivoted, the word
right.
of the year, to some caravans.
Right. Yeah, for international.
Talk about that. I love this.
Yeah, they seem to be a big hit. And we're probably going to keep doing the caravans.
Cool. Okay.
But every year, us and four other organizations, Prevent Ed being one of them, Soul, which is a grief support group, is another. Archway Institute mm-hmm. gets involved with it. And I know I'm probably missing somebody here.
We'll add it in underneath. Like, we'll just write it in underneath.
Right. Yeah.
So you all have been partnering on for International Overdose Day.
Yeah, which is August 31st.
Well, I should say we have been partnering,
right,
yes.
Right, yeah. So, yeah, because we couldn't have in-person events and where we typically had them in, like, under pavilions and that, and it was kind of close quarters, we did a caravan the first year. 2 years ago it was, and it seemed to be a big hit. So we tried it again this year, and it seemed to work again. People seemed to like it. So I think we're probably going to start having our committee meetings and planning meetings the 22nd of February is when we'll start working on planning that. So.
And you're always looking for volunteers, right? And
correct.
People who can assist.
Correct.
Because,
right.
Right now, you and Patty are doing a lot of the planning and
right.
implementation and all of that.
Right.
Yes.
Another thing, too, that we do add at our tables are at any other, events, we have these prescription locking bags that we hand out.
Yes.
That was made possible through a mini grant.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Can you tell me about Michael?
Sure. He was a happy, healthy, normal.
Normal. Let's put that in quotes because are any of us normal, Ellis?
Right.
I mean,
yeah. I'm bad.
I know. We're all abnormal.
but exactly. Yeah, define normal these days.
Yeah, exactly.
But no, I mean, he was a typical.
There we go.
That's probably a better phrasing of it. But he was typical.
Typical kid.
Happy, healthy, smart as a whip, done very good in school. In fact, one of the stories we like to share that when he was about 4 years old, we were on a family vacation eating at a restaurant down on the beach. And Patty and I saw these real long, lanky birds. And we're trying for the life of us to think of what they were called. And little four-year-old Michael, he says, well, them are blue herons. And, well, he was right.
Wow.
So he did very well. It seemed he got to about you know, he was involved in inline hockey. He was very close to earning his Eagle before he decided that the Eagle Scout, you know, Boy Scouts was no longer his cup of tea. But we always stood behind whatever, you know, he wanted to get involved in. We were hoping he'd find something that would really latch on, music lessons, you know, the whole nine yards, typical stuff. Around the time he was around eighth grade, I guess it was, maybe a little bit before that, it was like somebody snapped a switch. We didn't, at first, you know, for the longest time, we thought, well, this is just a normal teenage phase.
Yeah, like this is just like what happens.
You know, but it just
hormones
went on,
in.
It went on. So we decided to, you know, seek professional help. So we went to a counselor, which led to seeing a psychiatrist as well. He was diagnosed with bipolar, ADHD, oppositional defiant disorder, and God knows what else. But he never would open up to the counselors, nor would he ever open up to us. We don't think at that time that it was substance related, because he was pretty much a recluse. He stayed in the house. He didn't, you know, and
so maybe more of the mental health stuff.
Well, yeah, we think it was anxiety. Looking back at things, we think probably the biggest problem was anxiety.
And you're a pretty open guy. Were you and Patty always this open about talking about your feelings, and or has that come?
Well,
over
we didn't really talk much about what happened to Michael. Because, like I said, we were ashamed because of the stigma that we have to get rid of.
But in that moment, like, were you having conversations with him and with
each
other?
We were trying, but...
you were doing everything, quote-unquote, right, is what I'm getting at.
I don't know. I mean, Patty especially, from time to time, still goes back and kind of beats up on herself a little bit.
I can't imagine that. But you all were...
I think we did the best we could with the tools we had and what we knew.
There you go. Yeah. And I think that's important for people to know, because you can be doing everything, quote unquote, right.
Right.
And you can also be doing the very best that you know how to do.
Right.
And it furthers this idea that substance use disorders don't happen to one demographic or, quote, bad families or whatever. I mean, this is something that can really impact anyone. So you got him some support and some assistance, and did that change things?
No, because he didn't want to cooperate. He wouldn't open up. You know, the medications that they give, that's the whole scary thing in itself.
Yeah.
Not 100% sure that's the right answer all the time. I think it is. I think it's probably very helpful if the patient will work and open up. It's not just a matter of a silver bullet giving somebody a pill and it's fixed.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot involved to bouncing back from mental health issues, just as there is from substance use disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And so many times. In Michael's case, I think he took the path that many do take and started self-medication.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Xanax was his first, which that seems to be one of the medicines that they like to give out first,
mm-hmm.
you know, Xanax. And then he switched on over to opioids. He started heavily with cannabis at first, which, you know, and he, you know, said that, cured it. It helped his anxieties. Of course, we weren't okay with that. But Michael was Michael. We could not get through to him, and he was going to do whatever he wanted. And, you know, at that time, it was too young to even think about the tough love approach.
Right.
And I'm not so sure that that's necessarily a good thing either.
You know your son, and you know what would have had the potential to work and what also would have put up a wall, which would have made him even more reluctant to talk to you all.
I mean, we did try it at one time for a period of time, and unbeknownst to us, my mother took him in, and and amazingly, we became the biggest pieces of, you know,
yeah,
what?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh,
so,
yeah.
You know, and I'm glad she did that. I guess to a certain degree. I mean, I didn't think so at the right time, but he would have not survived.
Yeah.
I think his demise would have been sooner because he had no place to go. You know, we were always open to his friends, but, you know, truth of the matter, I don't think any of his friends could have done anything for him and taken him in terms of taking him in, giving him a place to stay or anything like that.
I mean, I think it would have been understandable if you and Patty, after Michael passed, if you all would have just said, like, we need to heal, no pun intended, as a family.
Right.
We want to sort through this, and we'll share our story with maybe our social circle,
yeah.
Maybe, because
yeah.
Not everybody's even comfortable doing that.
Yeah.
So that would have been an understandable feeling.
Yeah,
and it sounds like you all did that for a little bit.
Yeah, we were pretty, you know, I was a little more open about it with the guys that I worked, you know, with, because I'd worked with them for, you know, when I retired, I was there 37 years.
Wow.
So,
yeah.
You know, I had a few co-workers, colleagues there that, you know, that I would share, talk a little bit about it. And of course, you know, sometimes that went well, sometimes it didn't, because it's easy to armchair quarterback.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know.
So, I mean, that would have been understandable for you all to share your story in small steps and ways you felt comfortable. And you did that for a while, but then you also said, give me that damn megaphone.
Right. Yeah.
And now, no offense, I can't shut you up, and I don't want to. And so
my wife says the same thing.
I knew I liked Patty. So what was the switch for you? And I'd imagine, too, and I'm not trying to dig too personal, but I'd imagine it had to be a joint decision between you and Patty.
Oh, definitely.
So what was what changed?
Well, I mean, we just kind of got tired with sitting there with that big hole, open sore. So when we heard about Strategy 360, we decided it was time to do something. So, I mean, no matter what we do, we're not going to bring Michael back.
Right.
But maybe we can save somebody else.
And that's really what success looks like for you.
Yeah.
Do you get tired of telling your story? Like, do you get...
It never
like,
gets any easier.
Out?
It never gets any easier. Let's
no,
put it that way.
No.
In fact, probably for about the first 2 years of doing HEAL, I couldn't hold it together.
Yeah. I remember you saying
yeah.
that, actually.
So,
yeah.
You know, and I was afraid that if I lost it, which I probably would have, that I couldn't bring it back in. The emotion is fine to put out there.
Of course.
But you got to be able to rein it back in.
Yeah.
And Patty seemed to have the ability to do that.
Yeah, she was the kind of the spokesperson, if you will, but then you, for
yeah.
a while, but then you spoke at our golf tournament.
Yeah.
And, you know, I believe that the crowd was receptive and that you... You know, even seeing Patty out there, like, kind of having your back,
yeah.
you know.
I'd like to share the first time that she ever spoke. Of course, she was nervous, as you know, and she was having a very difficult time with it. And then all of a sudden, this fly kept bombarding her in the face. And she finally just broke out laughing.
Uh-huh.
You know, so that kind of eased that moment. And then when she sat back down next to me, I said, you know, that was Michael up there.
Mm-hmm. So, that's a great story.
Yeah.
So I know that you and Patty are in this to save lives.
Yes.
And sometimes you hear about that, and that has to feel tremendously gratifying when you hear that. It's a good outcome to a tragic situation.
Right.
But you don't always hear about, hey, you saved my life.
Right.
So what keeps you going? Because we don't always hear that. We don't get
right.
the phone calls. And a lot of what you're doing, I mean, one thing we didn't even really touch on is you've become sort of a support system for other parents.
Yeah.
And that work has to be so tremendously fatiguing. I don't know, but
yeah.
you know what I mean.
Yeah.
How do you keep going?
Just a passion to try to save lives, and, you know, there's still a lot to be done out there.
There is a lot to be
done. You know, at some point, maybe we'll burn out. You know, who knows? But as long as the health's here and, you know, the desire's here, I guess we'll keep on doing what we're doing.
Keep on keeping on. So. Well, I knew of you tangentially before I stepped into this role, and I feel really, I feel like you help us figure out how we can do a better job of supporting families who have lost. I think we tried to do a good job with that in the past, and I don't know that it was as much as we wanted to. And I like that you get riled up. And you help us stay connected, and you help us really remember what it is that mm-hmm. we're trying. And Patty, for I am really grateful to you and Patty for marching alongside of us and sometimes ahead of us, and we're trying to catch up with you. And you push. You're a pusher. I love it.
Back in the day, it was NCADA.
Yes.
NCADA, of course. They have been a big support of us and encouraged us to keep this going, because at first we didn't know if we wanted to do it, because things were getting slow and we were pouring a lot of our own finances
resources
into it.
Absolutely.
And that was kind of getting to the point where it's kind of like pouring salt into that open wound.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, like I say, since we, you know, did file for the 501c3 status, things just kind of started falling in place. You know, do we have enough money? I don't know that it in our line
ever,
of work.
Is there ever such a thing?
Enough, but,
yeah.
But we're able to do things, and you know, and it's really helped out a lot since we became a coalition. So.
Which is a great plug for becoming a coalition
right.
through the state of Missouri. And, you know, a lot of people don't really know what that means or what that looks like
right.
or the resources are available once you become a coalition.
Right.
So if you want to know more about becoming a coalition, if you want to join Heal Stop Heroin, they're always looking for volunteers and always looking for boots on the ground
yep.
to walk or to drive alongside them. Please consider rating, reviewing, and subscribing to the podcast. We love reviews, so thank you for that. Ellis, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, we appreciate it. I wouldn't have missed it for nothing. You know, it's we need to get the word out there however we can.
Yes, we do. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Thanks for joining us at The Preventable, brought to you ad-free by PreventEd. PreventEd works to reduce or prevent the harms of alcohol and other drug use through education, intervention, and advocacy. Please visit their website at PreventEd.org. Like what you heard? Rate, review, and subscribe to stay up to date with what we are serving on The Preventable.